Chapter 118. Breathing very hard for some little time, and performing a short series of dangerous evolutions with her umbrella, she managed to establish herself pretty comfortably. And which of all them smoking monsters is the Yankworks boat, I wonder? Goodness me! Apostrophe cried Mrs. Camp. What boat did you want? Apostrophe asked Ruth. The Yankworks package, apostrophe Mrs. Camp replied. I will not deceive you, my sweet. Why should I? Apostrophe, that is the Antwerp packet in the middle, apostrophe said Ruth. And I wish it was in Jonage's belly, I do, apostrophe cried Mrs. Camp, appearing to confound the prophet with the whale in this miraculous aspiration. Ruth said nothing in reply. But, as Mrs. Camp, laying her chin against the cool iron of the rail, continued to look intently at the Antwerp boat, and every now and then to give a little groan, she inquired whether any child of hers was going aboard that morning? Or perhaps her husband, she said kindly. Which shows, apostrophe said Mrs. Camp, casting up her eyes, what a little way you've traveled into this whale of life, my dear young creature. As a good friend of mine has frequent made remark to me, which her name, my love, is Harris, Mrs. Harris through the square, and up the steps a turning round by the tobacker shop, oh sorry, sorry, little do we know what lays afore us. Mrs. Harris, ma'am, I says, not much, it's true, but more than you suppose. Our calculations, ma'am, I says, respecting what the number of a family will be, comes most times within one, and oftener than you would suppose, exact. Sorry, says Mrs. Harris, in a awful way, tell me what is my individual number. No, Mrs. Harris, I says to her, excuse me, if you please. My own, I says, has fallen out of three pair backs, and had damp doorsteps settled on their lungs, and one was turned up smiling in a bedstead and beckoning. Therefore, ma'am, I says, seek not to participate, but take 'em as they come, and as they go. Mine, apostrophe says Mrs. Camp, mine is all gone, my dear young chick. And as to husbands, there's a wooden leg gone likewise home to its account, which in its constancy of walking in two wine vaults, and never coming out again till fetched by force, was quite as weak as flesh, if not weaker. Apostrophe, when she had delivered this oration, Mrs. Camp leaned her chin upon the cool iron again, and looking intently at the Antwerp packet, shook her head and groaned. I wouldn't, apostrophe said Mrs. Camp, I wouldn't be a man, and have such a thing upon my mind, but nobody as owned the name of man, could do it. Apostrophe, Tom and his sister glanced at each other, and Ruth, after a moment's hesitation, asked Mrs. Camp what troubled her so much. My dear, apostrophe returned that lady, dropping her voice, you are single, ain't you? Apostrophe, Ruth laughed, blushed, and said yes. Apostrophe, worse luck, apostrophe proceeded Mrs. Camp, for all parties. But others is married, and in the marriage state, and there is a dear young creature a coming down this morning to that very package, which is no more fit to trust herself to see than nothing is. Apostrophe, she paused here to look over the deck of the packet in question, and on the steps leading down to it, and on the gangways. Seeming to have thus assured herself that the object of her commiseration had not yet arrived, she raised her eyes gradually up to the top of the escape pipe, and indignantly apostrophized the vessel. Oh, drat you! Apostrophe said Mrs. Camp, shaking her umbrella at it, you're a nice spluttering noisy monster for a delicate young creature to go and be a passenger by, ain't you? You never do no harm in that way, do you? With your hammering, and roaring, and hissing, and lambiling, you brute! Them confusion steamers, apostrophe said Mrs. Camp, shaking her umbrella again, has done more to throw us out of our reglar work, and bring events on at times, when nobody counted on them, especially them screeching railroad ones, than all the other frights that ever was took. I have heard of one young man, a guard upon a railway, only 3 years opened. Well does Mrs. Harris know him, which indeed he is her own relation by her sister's marriage with a master sawyer as his godfather at this present time to 26 blessed little strangers, equally unexpected, and all on them named after the engines as was the cause. Ugh. Apostrophe said Mrs. Camp, resuming her apostrophe, one might easy know you was a man's invention, from your disregardlessness of the weakness of our matters, so one might, you brute. Apostrophe, it would not have been unnatural to suppose, from the first part of Mrs. Camp's lamentations, that she was connected with the stagecoaching or post-horsing trade. She had no means of judging of the effect of her concluding remarks upon her young companion, for she interrupted herself at this point, and exclaimed, "There she identically goes! Poor sweet young creature, there she goes, like a lamb to the sacrifice! If there's any illness, when that whistle gets to sea," apostrophe said Mrs. Camp, prophetically, "it's murder, and I'm the witness for the persecution." Apostrophe, she was so very earnest on the subject, that Tom's sister, being as kind as Tom himself, could not help saying something to her in reply. "Pray, which is the lady, apostrophe," she inquired, "in whom you are so much interested?" Apostrophe, there. Apostrophe, groaned Mrs. Camp. "There she goes. Across in the little wooden bridge at this minute. She's a slippin on a bit of orange peel." Apostrophe, tightly clutching her umbrella. "What a turn it give me!" Apostrophe, "do you mean the lady who is with that man wrapped up from head to foot in a large cloak, so that his face is almost hidden?" Apostrophe, "well, he may hide it." Apostrophe, Mrs. Camp replied. "He's good call to be ashamed of himself. Did you see him a jerking of her wrist then?" Apostrophe, "he seems to be hasty with her, indeed." Apostrophe, "now he's a taking of her down into the close cabin." Apostrophe, said Mrs. Camp, impatiently. "What's the man about? The deuce is in him, I think. Why can't he leave her in the open air?" Apostrophe, "he did not, whatever his reason was, but led her quickly down and disappeared himself, without loosening his cloak, or pausing on the crowded deck one moment longer than was necessary to clear their way to that part of the vessel." Tom had not heard this little dialogue, for his attention had been engaged in an unexpected manner. A hand upon his sleeve had caused him to look round, just when Mrs. Camp concluded her apostrophe to the steam engine, and on his right arm, Ruth being on his left, he found their landlord, to his great surprise. He was not so much surprised at the man's being there, as at his having got close to him so quietly and swiftly, for another person had been at his elbow one instant before, and he had not in the meantime been conscious of any change or pressure in the knot of people among whom he stood. He and Ruth had frequently remarked how noiselessly this landlord of theirs came into and went out of his own house, but Tom was not the less amazed to see him at his elbow now. "I beg your pardon, Mr. Pinch," apostrophe he said in his ear. "I am rather infirm and out of breath, and my eyes are not very good. I am not as young as I was, sir. You don't see a gentleman in a large cloak down yonder, with a lady on his arm, a lady in a veil and a black shawl, do you?" Apostrophe, if he did not, it was curious that in speaking he should have singled out from all the crowd the very people whom he described, and should have glanced hastily from them to Tom, as if he were burning to direct his wandering eyes. "A gentleman in a large cloak," apostrophe said Tom, "and a lady in a black shawl. Let me see." Apostrophe, replied the other, with keen impatience. "A gentleman muffled up from head to foot, strangely muffled up for such a morning as this, like an invalid, with his hand to his face at this minute, perhaps. No. Not there," apostrophe he added, following Tom's gaze, "the other way, in that direction, down yonder. Apostrophe again, he indicated, but this time in his hurry, with his outstretched finger, the very spot on which the progress of these persons was checked at that moment. There are so many people, and so much motion, and so many objects, apostrophe said Tom, that I find it difficult to know. I really don't see a gentleman in a large cloak, and a lady in a black shawl. There's a lady in a red shawl over there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, no, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried his landlord, pointing eagerly again, not there. The other way, the other way. Look at the cabin steps. To the left. They must be near the cabin steps. Do you see the cabin steps? There's the bell ringing already. Do you see the steps? Apostrophe, stay. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Tom, you're right. Look. There they go now. Is that the gentleman you mean? Descending at this minute, with the folds of a great cloak trailing down after him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the very man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the other, not looking at what Tom pointed out, however, but at Tom's own face. Will you do me a kindness, sir, a great kindness? Will you put that letter in his hand? Only give him that. He expects it. I am charged to do it by my employers, but I am late in finding him, and, not being as young as I have been, should never be able to make my way on board, and off the deck again in time. Will you pardon my boldness, and do me that great kindness? Apostrophe, apostrophe, his hands shook, and his face bespoke the utmost interest and agitation, as he pressed the letter upon Tom, and pointed to its destination, like the tempter in some grim old carving. To hesitate in the performance of a good-natured or compassionate office was not in Tom's way. He took the letter, whispered Ruth to wait till he returned, which would be immediately, and ran down the steps with all the expedition he could make. There were so many people going down, so many others coming up, such heavy goods in course of transit to and fro, such a ringing of bell, blowing off of steam, and shouting of men's voices, that he had much ado to force his way, or keep in mind to which boat he was going. But he reached the right one with good speed, and going down the cabin stairs immediately, described the object of his search standing at the upper end of the saloon, with his back towards him, reading some notice which was hung against the wall. As Tom advanced to give him the letter, he started, hearing footsteps, and turned round. What was Tom's astonishment to find in him the man with whom he had had the conflict in the field, poor Mercy's husband? Jonas. Tom understood him to say, what the devil did he want, but it was not easy to make out what he said. He spoke so indistinctly. I want nothing with you for myself, apostrophe said Tom. I was asked, a moment since, to give you this letter. You were pointed out to me, but I didn't know you in your strange dress. Take it. Apostrophe, he did so, opened it, and read the writing on the inside. The contents were evidently very brief, not more perhaps than one line, but they struck upon him like a stone from a sling. He reeled back as he read. His emotion was so different from any Tom had ever seen before that he stopped involuntarily. Momentary as his state of indecision was, the bell ceased while he stood there, and a hoarse voice calling down the steps inquired if there was any to go ashore. Yes, apostrophe cried Jonas, I am coming. Give me time. Where's that woman? Come back here. Apostrophe, he threw open another door as he spoke, and dragged, rather than led, her forth. She was pale and frightened, and amazed to see her old acquaintance, but had no time to speak, for they were making a great stir above, and Jonas drew her rapidly towards the deck. Where are we going? What is the matter? Apostrophe, we are going back, apostrophe said Jonas. I have changed my mind. I can't go. Don't question me, or I shall be the death of you, or someone else. Stop there. Stop. We're for the shore. Do you hear? We're for the shore. He turned, even in the madness of his hurry, and scowling darkly back at Tom, shook his clenched hand at him. There are not many human faces capable of the expression with which he accompanied that gesture. He dragged her up, and Tom followed them. Across the deck, over the side, along the crazy plank, and up the steps, he dragged her fiercely, not bestowing any look on her, but gazing upwards all the while among the faces on the wharf. Suddenly he turned again, and said to Tom with a tremendous oath, "Where is he?" Before Tom, in his indignation and amazement, could return an answer to a question he so little understood, a gentleman approached Tom behind, and saluted Jonas Chuzzlewit by name. He is a gentleman of foreign appearance, with a black mustache and whiskers, and addressed him with a polite composure, strangely different from his own distracted and desperate manner. "Chuzzlewit, my good fellow," said the gentleman, raising his hat in compliment to Mrs. Chuzzlewit, "I ask your pardon 20,000 times. I am most unwilling to interfere between you, and a domestic trip of this nature always so very charming and refreshing, I know, although I have not the happiness to be a domestic man myself, which is the great infelicity of my existence, but the beehive, my dear friend, the beehive, will you introduce me?"
"This is Mr. Montague," said Jonas, whom the words appeared to choke.
"The most unhappy and most penitent of men, Mrs. Chuzzlewit," pursued that gentleman, "for having been the means of spoiling this excursion. But as I tell my friend, the beehive. You projected a short little continental trip, my dear friend, of course?"
Jonas maintained a dogged silence.
"May I die," cried Montague, "but I am shocked. Upon my soul, I am shocked. But that confounded beehive of ours in the city must be paramount to every other consideration, when there is honey to be made. And that is my best excuse. Here is a very singular old female dropping curtsies on my right," said Montague, breaking off in his discourse, and looking at Mrs. Gamp, "who is not a friend of mine. Does anybody know her?"
"Well, they knows me, bless their precious hearts," said Mrs. Gamp,
"not forgetting your own merry one, sir, and long may it be so. Wishing as everyone,"
she delivered this in the form of a toast or sentiment, "was as merry, and as handsome looking, as a little bird has whispered me a certain gent is, which I will not name for fear I give offense where none is due. My precious lady," here she stopped short in her merriment, for she had until now affected to be vastly entertained, "ere to pale by half.
You are here too, are you?"
Muttered Jonas. "Ecod, there are enough of you."
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.